Hey friends, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Today we've got Eric Geiger on the podcast. This is an incredibly important conversation. Please lean in and pay attention. There's some really good stuff in today's interview. I also want to remind you that today's episode is brought to us by our friends at Ministry Grid. You know and I know that training volunteers and leaders is critically important, but have you ever had that feeling of, oh my goodness, where do I start? Well, I can tell you where you start. You start with Ministry Grid. Their library has over 3,000 training videos, literally on everything that it takes to run your church. The work has been done for you, and there's incredible leaders, actually like Eric Geiger, who have already done videos ready to go for your church. They've curated not just the videos, but also pathways so that you can provide kind of easy step-by-step instruction for your leaders. It's an incredible tool. Now, on these videos, there are leaders that you can trust. Again, folks like Eric Geiger. But each Ministry Grid training video also allows you to enhance the experience by customizing it with your own video. So you can actually provide kind of your own commentary or add to it, make it custom for your particular church. You can add PDFs, YouTube videos, etc. And it's all portable, ready to go. And the price is unreal. You can get unlimited access for everyone in your church for just $597. Just go to ministrygrid.com. Again, that's ministrygrid.com. Now, let's sit back, lean in, and pay attention to today's interview with Eric Geiger. Let's go.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey everybody, happy Thursday. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. I am super honored that you would tune in today. I think today's conversation is one of those that not only is timeless, but I think it's going to be really helpful and practical for you as you lead in your church. Honored to have Eric Geiger with us. Eric most recently was at our good friend's Lifeway, but then has actually transitioned into a new role at Mariners Church, a fantastic church in Southern California. Eric, welcome to the show.
Rich, thanks for having me on, man. It's an honor.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're here. I've been a fan from afar of your work, and I'm just honored that you would take some time out to chat with us today. Why don't you tell us, when we're recording this, you're just a few days into the new role at Mariners. Well, welcome to this new role, and why don't you tell us, for folks that don't know about Mariners, tell us a little bit about the church and obviously what your role is there.
So I became senior pastor like 5 days ago.
Nice.
I'm brand new. The process began for me in February when they reached out. Actually, the search firm that was running their succession story reached out to see if I'd be interested in talking about becoming the senior pastor here. Kenton Beshore has been the pastor for 35 years. He is incredible. He announced really about a year ago that he was going to transition to, and he's going to stay on as pastor emeritus, which we joke around that, you know, that means like the old guy, but I'm just grateful he's here, because I've learned, even in the first couple of days being in the office, I've just learned so much from him. The Lord's used him in an incredible way. The church is, has really made a significant impact in this county and really around the world. It's a church with a global vision. And so just gracious people, great people. Mm-hmm. I've really, really enjoyed my first couple of days here and just honored to be invited.
Nice. Yeah. For folks that have listened to the podcast for a while might remember we had Aaron Kerr from Mariners on Discipleship Pastor, all about Rooted. It's a fantastic church that, you know, I would encourage you to strongly lean in on and listen. And you know, what we want to talk about today is a little bit of a tender subject. It's one of those things that I know you have some passion around and you've done some thinking around, and I really want to kind of tap into you and help us really think through. You know, there are times where we look around as church leaders and it seems like the folks we've looked up to, or, you know, maybe leaders at significant ministries, they've fallen and kind of wrecked their life. It's kind of ended up, you know, going by the wayside, whether that's through moral failure or whether that's, you know, through addiction or their, you know, marriage spinning out of control, or just maybe even worse, this slow burn, internal like just loss of love for Jesus. And so what I want to do today is to talk about that and hopefully be really practical with folks around how we can help and lead our staffs in a way that helps them not ultimately ruin their lives, but then also as we think about our own lives as well. So why don't we talk a little bit about this issue, this pain that you've seen in the church? Yeah. It almost seems like an epidemic.
Right.
You know, what has got you thinking about this over these last few years?
Man, it like you said, the word epidemic, that's what's really caused me to think about it more and more. And I've seen leaders and ministry leaders, so not just in ministry marketplace as well, but often ministry leaders, brothers and sisters that I've looked up to, that times I've looked at them and thought, man, he loves Jesus more than I love Jesus.
Right.
And seen people like that implode and fall. And so it's really been sanctifying for me to watch, because I think I went through a season early in ministry where I was filled with pride and would think, oh, that would never happen to me. He must not have spent time with the Lord the way I spend time with the Lord, or he lost his passion for Christ. I'll never lose my passion for Christ. But the longer I've been in the game, the more I realize that there are people who share Jesus more than I do, who have read the Bible more than I have, who have led longer than I have, and they have wrecked their lives. And so it's caused me not to think I'm strong. It's caused me to realize how frail I am and how easily this could happen to me. So that's what's caused me to really think about it a lot, is a sense of fear of, gosh, will I be a stat? Will I be, you know, blog fodder one day? And what needs to happen in my heart between me and the Lord for that not to happen? And then also, Rich, sadly, I've even had it happen with some people on my team in my former role, and just the devastation that it causes to the momentum of a ministry, the devastation it causes to marriages and families, team members, the massive distraction it is for the whole team and the people. It becomes the thing in the room for a long time.
Right. Why don't we talk a little bit about what some of those, you know, early warning signs that, you know, things are maybe heading in the wrong direction. And that could be in our own lives or in, you know, people around us where we're like, something might be off there. What are some of those things that we could, you know, we should be identifying or maybe looking for?
Yeah, when I look at King David's fall, and so, you know, there's another indication that it can easily happen to me. I mean, right. I've not pinned Psalms, you know, David pinned, yes, Psalms. No one said of me publicly, that is a man after God's own heart. And so here's David, you know, he was a man after God's own heart, and the Lord used him to unite the tribes, to be this really faithful king who said in Psalms, he led with skillful hands and a pure heart. And so he was a godly man, and yet he had an affair with Bathsheba, killed her husband, this crazy cover-up story. But when you look early in the story in 2 Samuel 11, which is the story of his implosion, you see some things that indicate it's going to happen. So you see he's isolated. He had sent people away. You know, so to me, that's a big indication. And a lot of leaders I've talked to who have come back from an implosion, they have admitted that they got isolated. Perhaps the success caused them to feel as if no one understands them. They were no longer transparent with people. They were only surrounded by people who were impressed with them. And so you see that in David. He's isolated.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a little bit. One of my convictions, I've had the honor of being in that kind of executive pastor role for almost 20 years with three very incredible lead pastors who I respect deeply and I think do an amazing amount of work. But one of the things that it was struck by each of them watching those over the years is that role, particularly that senior leadership role, I would say, and I've said this to friends in the past, you know, they don't have peers. You know, what they do is so different than the rest of everyone else on the staff team. The weight that they feel is different than anyone else. You know, there's a it's almost like built in isolation into the role itself. It's like, in fact, for it to work, it's almost like they have to be isolated. And so one of the things I've tried to do is encourage them to find other peers. Let's find some other people that you can be friends with, other lead pastors or people that are a little farther down the road. What would be some of those signs, of isolation that, it would seem like it's maybe even easier now than ever before to be isolated and pull back?
And you're right. There's definitely encouragement, because if you're in that senior leader role, and I'm in that role now, if you don't have some space and margin in your life, you even relationally, you'll just get slammed with the number of people who are asking for your time. And so you are advised, you are counseled to have margin, to be sure you have time to prepare and think and not neglect your family. And so even the desire can start pure, I think, So here's what I would say, the warning sign. I agree with your counsel that you've got to have some people around you. I'd say those people, some of those people have to be people who can rebuke you,
Right.
Who aren't
that impressed.
Yes, yes, exactly. Who aren't in awe of you and are so giddy to spend time with you that they're going to just be constantly telling you how amazing you are.
Right.
You've got to have some people around you who really aren't that amazed with you. You know, they love you and they respect you, but they don't think that you are this amazing person who they can't believe they get to spend time with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on the back on the King David example, I've always been struck while everyone else was off at war, he was back, and you get this picture of almost twiddling his thumbs, right?
Yeah.
And what role does boredom play, you think? Yeah. And I know there's church leaders that are listening in today that are like, boredom, I am like running, a million miles. But what place does boredom play in this whole issue?
Yeah, the more I've walked with the Lord, the longer I've walked with the Lord, the more I've seen boredom as a sin that leads to other sins. Martin Lloyd-Jones said that sin is always, in some sense, a life of boredom. And you see David, and he's on the roof, and he gets up from his bed, and he's walking on the palace roof. He's looking for something. That's verse 2. So this is the same David that at one point in his life, and even later in his life, Psalm 63, he's saying, I think of you, God, through the watches of the night. Your love is better than life. But not 2 Samuel 11. 2 Samuel 11, he's not thinking of God through the watches of the night. He's walking on the roof and he's looking for something. Boredom is a common phrase that in my years of being a ministry leader, I've heard people say, and it comes off like this. Man, I feel like I'm in a bored season right now, or I'm under challenged. I'm looking for a new challenge. I feel like I've done what I'm supposed to do. I'm a little anxious. I used to think that was no big deal when someone would say that. Now it's a warning sign for me, because
that's good.
If we're bored, it means we're not looking at the Lord, because he's never boring. He's never boring. He breathes significance into the mundane, into the rhythm of life that can get a little mundane. But if we're looking at the Lord, he always breathes life and significance into that.
Well, and I love that even, the mission that God's called us to isn't a boring mission.
Right.
And if we look at what we do and we're like, oh, I don't know, this just isn't that interesting.
Right.
It's not that exciting. I'm going to go find something else to be more excited about. That is going to end up in a very negative spot.
Absolutely.
Now, what about what place does like pride or even ultimately narcissism? Mm-hmm. I read this very disturbing statistic recently. 31.2% of it was a study that was looking specifically at the narcissistic personality disorder, and it was a national study. It was 1,000 pastors, and they found in this study 31.2% of active pastors in the study would be described as with NPD, a narcissistic personality disorder.
Really? Where'd you read that? Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah, I'll send you the link to it. We'll link to it. It's in this book called "Let Us Pray: The Frequency of Narcissism, Personality Disorders, and Pastors." And so, it's the American Association of Christian Counselors study on this issue. I'll send it over to you. But we'll link to it in the notes too. But the interesting piece of that is, it really at the end of the day, it's about pride, right? It's about saying, "Hey," which we saw in David's story. This is why this is so relevant, because it's like, it's thousands of years old, and it's as relevant as yesterday, and it's as relevant as in my life today. What role does pride play, you know, kind of before the fall, as you know, as before we ruin our lives?
You know, we get the term narcissist from the Greek mythological figure who was destroyed because of pride, looked at himself, his own reflection in the water, and just, you know, one of the fables ends with just stays there forever looking at his own reflection, and another version falls in the water and dies. But either way, pride completely debilitates us and ruins our leadership. It's probably the one that we will preach on the most and we think about the most. And we've all read the verse, pride comes before a fall, pride always leads to destruction. The frightening thing about pride, and this is frightening for me, if C.S. Lewis is right, and I believe he is, that he called in his classic work, Mere Christianity, that pride is the great sin that we see in everybody else, but we have trouble seeing in ourselves. And so it's there, but we don't see it in ourselves. And the longer I've watched leaders implode, this is to me an indicator you can look at in your own heart, and I can look at in my own heart. That is an indication of pride, and that would be an ungrateful spirit or ingratitude. And you do see that in David. You see when he's confronted in the next chapter by the prophet Nathan, that Nathan's saying to him, God did all of this for you. He took you from the field, from the pasture, to you're leading all of God's people. And that wasn't enough for you. That wasn't enough for you, David. So you weren't filled with gratitude for what the Lord gave. You wanted more. You wanted more. So it really comes down to pride, having a sense of entitlement as if you've earned it. So you've earned something. Your ministry's grown, or your influence has spread, and you're owed something. And so that was David. I'm, you know, hey, look at my approval ratings. Look at all I've accomplished. If I want this woman to come to my palace, I'm the king. Anything I want, I get.
Amazing. And I know, you know, when I think about pride in my own life, I love that C.S. Lewis quote, because it, you know, there is this idea. It's so easy to see in other people. It's easy to be like, man, things are terrible over there. But on this side of the table, things are great.
Right.
Yeah. Now, what would you say, you know, let's think about this issue from a kind of a staff leadership, or from a, you know, not even just a staff leadership, from a discipleship point of view, or leading other people. How do we, you know, practically look for help people in the early stages of this? Because one of the things when you sit with people, as I'm sure you have as well, when you sit with people on the other side of some, you know, cataclysmic ruin situation, you know, it's usually not that someone wakes up one morning and decides to do something crazy. It usually is a slow burn over an extended period of time. And I know your heart and my heart is to help people when they're early in that process. How would you coach us to be thinking about that with our teams, with our people?
Yeah. Well, I want to combat against those three sins that we mentioned, you know, isolation, boredom, and pride. The famous John Owen quote, be killing sin or sin will be killing you. So I'm thinking, okay, how do I kill isolation? How do I kill boredom? How do I kill pride? So to kill isolation, it's really the basics. As a leader, I want to be sure that the teams that I'm leading are in some type of community where they're held accountable. To kill boredom, I want to remind those that I'm leading of the holy mission we're a part of, the beauty of the church that we're called to serve, the grand story that we've been invited into. It's never boring. So I want to stir that up by God's grace, stir up the affection for the mission and the bigness of it. And then for pride, I want to fight pride and kill pride by reminding people over and over again that everything we have, from our salvation to the shirt we put on today, is only by His grace. We aren't owed it, and we don't deserve it. And it's only by His grace. And so that's the only way that pride will be killed in my life, if I'm filled with gratitude.
Very good. Now, you've taken a fairly big risk in that you actually wrote a book around this whole topic. Yes. And, you know, which I think is a brave thing to do, because, you know, there are other leaders who have written books on this and then gone on you know, years later to have problems fall apart in their own life. And unfortunately, in all that coverage, you see it loop back and people are saying, ironically, he wrote this book about this thing. But here, this book you've written, which I think is a huge gift to so many churches. And so I want to talk about it today. The name of the book is How to Ruin Your Life and Starting Over When You Do. What led you to rewrite this book? What brought you to the spot where you're like, hey, I think this is the next thing I want to write on?
Yeah. It really came from a season of pain of seeing leaders fall. And I after a staff meeting with my team at Lifeway, so I wrote it while I was senior vice president there. My direct reports, we had a meeting where there was weeping and praying for some leaders who had fallen. It was painful. Mm-hmm. And several people on the team encouraged me to speak to all of our employees on this issue. And I really sensed that the Lord had wanted me to before, but I was always scared to address it because we had taken several authors out of print or stopped selling resources because of moral failure. And I didn't want to feel as if I was piling on any of those people. But at this point, it was just so many, as you mentioned earlier, felt epidemic that I just went for it. And so I stood in front of all our employees. There's probably, I don't know, 600-700 people in the room at the time. And I spoke from King David's fall and just begged our team to keep their eyes on Jesus. I basically preached against those three things we just talked about. And the head of our book publishing area, Jennifer, she came to me and said, that's got to be a book. And I said, I've got the content. So that's how it started.
Well, the thing I love about this is, And we haven't talked about this side of the equation at all, but really the kind of starting over when you do, I'd love to talk a little bit about that side because, you know, we can see the problems, but then you know, I'm sure there may be even people that are listening in today that they have an inclination of like, man, something has gone awry in my own life. What would be some of those initial steps that you would be encouraging people to take when things have gone wrong? And then how do we create, I think, and this one, this may be a whole other conversation, but how do we create the kind of cultures where people can actually start over?
Yeah.
Where we do create a grace-driven environment that actually creates space for that. Cause and that I think is supremely difficult. I don't ask that in a flippant manner. I think that is, you know, incredibly hard to do.
Yeah. Those are such weighty questions and such important questions. So I'll hit the first one first. The beautiful story about David is it doesn't end with his fall. And that's why I'm really grateful for the stories in scripture. This story, as scandalous as this story was, really God's forgiveness and God's grace is much bigger than the sin in the story. And so David's confronted, he repents. And so I'd say if you're listening to this and you have fallen, you need to understand that God's grace is bigger than your fall, but you do want to learn from how David repented. And so he was very different than Saul when Saul was confronted. So Saul, the former king, he made excuses when he was confronted. When the prophet confronted him about him disobeying and not destroying all the Amalekites, you know, Saul says, hey, the people, they told me to do this. I was saving the best. He was making excuses. I was saving the best for God. And that's when the famous quote, you know, to obey is better than sacrifice was given. David's very different. He doesn't offer any excuses. So when he's confronted by Nathan, look at my context. Look at the pressure I was facing. Look at what was going on in my life. I didn't have people around me who were holding me accountable. He offered zero context for his sin. He just repented. He offered zero excuses. So when you read Psalm 51, which is his famous prayer of repentance, he doesn't mention Bathsheba. He doesn't mention the men who went and got Bathsheba for him. He doesn't mention the pressure of being king. He only talks about how his heart is so sinful and in such need of God's grace. So you've seen this. I've seen this. We've seen leaders who, when they get called on their sin, the repentance doesn't seem to come quickly. It seems to be the story. There's more and more details to the story. They don't own it at first. And maybe that's how repentance works often. You know, maybe it does take, maybe it is a process, but you're not going to get to the healing. You're not going to get to the grace until you own your sin fully. And that's a lesson we see in David.
Yeah. You know, I know so many times when we've seen, you know, insert whatever the situation is that has gone on, there have been these moments where, because, you know, when you're in church leadership for a while, you know, people ask, right? They're like, hey, what do you think about what's going on at XYZ church or right. whatever? And, you know, unfortunately, I find myself coming back to time and time again where I'm saying the same thing. There's this moment where it feels like if a leader could humbly come before their people, come before and actually do exactly what David said there. Like, I am a screwed up person. Yes. I've made a mistake. I am, is it by God's grace that I'm not struck dead right now.
Right.
But then there seems to be this pattern where that isn't what happens, right? We're going to try to skate under it or try to point at something else or somehow we try to make ourselves the victim. And you know, the part that's humbling in that is I feel my, and this is genuine. I, at that moment, when I see leaders do that, I'm like, oh, like, Lord, give me grace because I see that. And I'm like, that is inside of me, this desire to try to cover up, this desire to try to, hey, let's make everything. It goes back as germane as Adam and Eve in the garden, where they sin, and what is the thing they do? They try to hide, right? They try to cover up. And so, you know, love that encouragement. And this is a part of what I love about this book. I think as a practical, and not trying to, obviously we're talking about pretty tender things today. I don't want to get super tactical on people and be like, wow, he just went really practical. But I do want to underline something really practical for you church leaders that are listening in today. Unfortunately, there will come another time where another leader who we all respect will, and I hope this book's irrelevant, but
Amen.
Unfortunately, it probably will be relevant again. And I know that there have been multiple times, you know, in the last couple of years where people have reached out and said, hey, we're doing a team meeting. I'm gathering all my people together and saying, hey, we need to talk again about our moral boundaries. We need to talk about what it means to live the kind of life that God's called us to live. We need to talk about the mission again. And I think what you've done here, Eric, is you've given a really practical resource for that conversation. Unfortunately, I think this book could be the kind of thing, if you're faced with that moment, you know, get on Amazon, order a copy for everybody on your team and say, guys, this is such an important topic. We want to take the next 4 weeks to read through this, to think about it, to wrestle through it, and not just skirt by it, not just be like, hey, we're going to have a 10-minute conversation at the end of a staff meeting. But honestly, I do think that you have created a great help, a great resource here for us as we unfortunately will probably face these again in the future. So I'd encourage people, where could people pick this up if they're interested in getting a copy?
Yeah, where all great books are sold. <Not joking>. So Lifeway's got it. Amazon has it. You know, Christian bookstores have it. And so it's, that's where it's
all there. Yeah. That's great. Well, is there anything else you'd love to share about this, or is there anything else you'd like to say before we kind of move on with the rest of the episode?
I want to follow up with what we ended with there and say, if you are leading and you have fallen, God's grace is bigger. God's grace is bigger than your fall, and run to His grace. Don't run to a cave of excuses. Run to a cave of His mercy.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask similar questions, which does feel very strange after this conversation.
Well, we got to make a hard right turn at some point.
I know. And we got Eric Geiger on, who's just been a real gift today. I've really appreciated this conversation. But I am actually intrigued on these questions. And, you know, for listeners who are listening in, it's funny because I've asked multiple people. I've said, like, hey, do you think we should get rid of these questions at the end? And people are like, no, it's the best part. So I know there are people who wait right till the end, which is fun. But what is an online resource that you're using these days to help you do what you do, Eric?
It's funny. The questions, my answers have changed since you were kind of sending them ahead of time because I just moved.
Oh, nice.
Google Maps is my go-to my go-to resource now, just because, man, I'm trying to learn a new area. So that's my number one app right now is actually Google Maps.
You have become like every one of my friends in California. I feel like everyone I know in California, I can't go through a conversation without talking about the traffic and how to get places. That's and so where to funny. They're always like, I got to go on the 405 and the, you know, 623 and all that. It is like embedded in the culture, and you've only been there 5 days and you're already talking about that. So that's good. Good for you. You're becoming a native.
Right.
That's great. What's a book you've read? I'm intrigued in this one that you've read in the last 6 months or maybe a year that shaped your thinking or ministry.
There's a book by Clay Christensen called Competing Against Luck. It's a business book, but you've probably heard, many of the listeners I'm sure have heard of that. He wrote The Innovator's Solution and The Innovator's mm-hmm. Dilemma years ago. He has a framework called Competing Against Luck, which basically, how would that apply to ministry? It's really when you're thinking about offering a program or anything you're offering your people to ask yourself, okay, what problem are we solving in someone's life? You know, what job are we helping them do for them to progress more towards the Lord? So it's a business book, but there's some implications from that book. That's been a helpful read.
Very cool. What's another ministry you're looking at that's inspiring you these days?
So that it's been exciting coming here to Mariners because of the relationships that Mariners has with churches around the globe. And so just hearing some of the stories already of churches around the globe that are making disciples and seeing life change happen in a really incredible way. I'm looking forward to learning from them. And there'd be churches that you wouldn't have heard about, but actually you mentioned earlier the discipleship curriculum that program that Mariners has called Rooted. It actually came from places around the globe. It didn't come from here, you know? So that's, I'm looking forward to that learning.
Very cool. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get that with and why?
So currently I would want to spend time with John Cotter. He wrote the famous change book, Leading Change. So just cause I'm starting a new role, if I had 15 minutes with Cotter, I would enjoy those 15 right now.
Nice. That's great. Well, I can imagine, you know, the last question here is what do you do for fun? But I imagine right now it's mostly unpacking boxes. But what do you do when you want to just relax a little bit, kick back, enjoy life?
Well, we are trying to be very intentional to help our kids fall in love with this area. So we've actually done several fun things already. We've done stand-up paddle boarding and they loved that. We hit the beach 3 times, Disneyland once. So we are doing all we can to help our kids fall in love with Orange County. And so those have all been really fun.
Good. Well, Eric, I really appreciate being on the show today. Thank you so much again, folks. We'll have links to everything we talked about in the show notes. I really would encourage you to pick up a copy of the book, put it on your shelf. Hopefully you won't need it. It'll be one of those ones that'll just get lots of dust on it, but unfortunately we probably will. So I'd love for you to pick up a copy of it. If people want to get in touch with you, Eric, or the church, how can they do that?
That's good. So ericgeiger.com is where I have blog and different, you know, books, resources, things. And then marinerschurch.org is the church's site.
Thank you so much. Appreciate being on the show today, Eric.
Thank you, Rich.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.